Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, December 23rd, which means 2 days before Christmas, Jen.
Yep.
What do you think of that?
I'm ready for Christmas.
Yeah?
I am.
Me too.
Been preparing all month. I feel like most people are like, okay, let's just get there now.
Yeah. Let me see. I'm going to bring up the mic, the headphones a little bit because I don't hear you very well.
Oh.
Welcome to the show. It was your birthday. Happy birthday
Thank
to you.
Thank you.
It was yesterday.
Yes.
And so it's the 22nd of December.
Yes.
And how was it? You've got your mom in town.
Mm-hmm.
She's sitting here. She's not going to say a word, but her presence is here, which is very inspiring. And we have a very fascinating guest we're going to get to in just a minute. And just tell us, how was the birthday? What did you do?
It was great. We woke up. I made breakfast for my mom and my best friend. And then we went to yoga together.
Really? So you made the breakfast?
Yeah.
Although it should have been made for you.
Well, I make the same thing every day and everyone seems to like it. So.
Okay.
why fix what ain't broken? So.
Exactly. And if you make good breakfast, then why not, right?
Right. And it was just a nice way to like ease into the day.
Yeah.
So we all got ready together, went to yoga. Then went to the spa and got
massages. Oh, so you dragged them to yoga with you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I love it. I have to do it too.
I know. So you got to bring everybody.
It's my day.
Yeah.
I was in charge.
Exactly.
So then we went to the spa, got massages, and then relaxed for a bit. And then we all went to dinner at my uncle's with the cousins and the cousins' fiancés.
Oh, wow. How cool.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Yeah. So you got massages and everything.
Yeah.
Did you go to a cool place?
Burke Williams.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty much the best place to go to, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very nice, and it was decorated inside for the holidays, and it was very relaxing.
Yeah.
So it was a lovely day.
I know, massages are cool, although I always tend to fall asleep while I'm getting massaged, so I don't get to enjoy it as much.
But well, that means you are enjoying it.
I'm enjoying it, right?
That means your mind isn't wandering, and you're actually relaxed.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, think about everything and can't stop. And
really?
I'm like, oh, no, an hour went by.
But what about the yoga? Does that help you with that?
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
It helps you focus a little more, right?
Right.
On other things.
Yeah. Because you're busy breathing and holding poses and thinking about that.
Right.
You can't really think about anything else.
Right. Did you get some nice presents and everything?
I did. I got
wow,
great things.
Cool.
I got an Apple TV and I got a ring.
Wow.
Yeah.
So cool stuff.
Yeah. It was a great birthday.
Wow. Awesome. And you're 30 years old today.
Yeah.
Right? 30 years and one day.
Exactly.
And that's very cool. How does it feel?
Feels the same.
The same. Okay.
Now that I have to remember to answer, I'm 30 when people ask.
Exactly.
That's
You're no longer 29.
Right.
I'm sure nobody believed you when he said 29, right? Because everybody says it.
I mean, I don't even know. I don't know why people lie about their age.
I know.
I'm not in the business of lying, so.
I know.
I'm 30. Guess what? I'm 30.
Yeah. There you go. You know, I don't know why people are afraid to give their age. I mean, you know, and especially women and stuff. Because
right.
The thing is, I mean, look, the average person's going to figure out, you know, by looking at you about how old you are. It's not like, you know, and especially as you get older and stuff, it's easier to, you know, to pinpoint.
Right.
So at least for me it is. So I don't see the point in not giving away your age, but it sort of like became a taboo type of a thing. You can't ask people.
Well, you can ask people. I mean, you also shouldn't say anything about anybody's weight. But
right.
In the entertainment business, women do better as, you know, younger,
right.
I guess.
Well, that's in entertainment. But, I mean, in general, everybody's like that, you know. It's like you don't ask a woman her age. Okay, I won't, you know.
Yeah.
I'll figure it out myself.
I mean, if I look good when I'm older, ask me. I'll tell you. You know,
right.
I'll be proud of it.
Yeah.
Like now I'm just like, I'm 30.
Yeah.
I feel about 15, but I'm 30, you know.
I know. I feel 15 too sometimes. But that's a good thing. You know, you got to feel young at heart.
Yeah.
You really do. Otherwise, man, you can't win this battle of getting older.
Right. Didn't we read that the other day that you live longer if you feel young?
If you feel younger at heart, right.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll keep on doing what we're doing and
right.
We'll live longer.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Going to live past 100, probably. That's what they say, that now people are living past 100.
Really? Some people are, huh?
Yeah, because I think we're... I don't know why, actually.
Well, we've learned to extend people's lives, you know, and better medicine and everything, so people last longer. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the body is meant to last that long, you know, through evolution. I mean, you know, people used to die at 40, 50.
Well, that was when, you know, they didn't have modern medicine.
Right. Exactly.
They died from a cold.
Right. So we're extending everybody's lives, and then the world becomes crowded, and we don't know what to do anymore. But, you know, that's life. What are we going to do?
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Survival of the fittest.
Right. Yeah.
And by the time, you know, it's overcrowded, those people won't be driving anymore. They'll be off the roads.
You think?
Well, after a certain age, I'm going to stop driving.
Yeah. I know. I don't know that I want to wait. I don't know that I want to live that long to see what happens in, like, 2050 or something. Well, I'm never going to
I think it'll be cool. It'll be like Jetsons time. Like,
yeah, huh?
I want to see cars that fly.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the positive side of it, you know. But but think about all of our privacy and everything. I mean, all that is, like, going away completely.
But we'll just get used to it as it happens.
You're going
to
get like a police state and everything if things continue the way they are.
Like 1984?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Well, the way things are, yeah.
We'll just adjust.
Yeah, I guess we will, right?
Yep.
At least it's a slow process, so you don't feel a change right away and stuff.
Right.
But just think how differently we live today from when we did 20 years ago before the internet and everything.
I don't remember.
You know? Yeah. You don't remember?
I was little.
Yeah, you were.
All I know is now. Actually, yeah. That's not true because I'm having a hard time with technology. I can't sync anything. I don't know why my technology never works. I don't understand these products.
Yeah, I know. They're supposed to make you feel better, and they're totally stressful, right?
But then when they don't work, you're like, ah.
Yeah, I know. And half the time, they don't work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Like when my app shuts down, I'm like, what happened? Where'd you go?
Yeah, I know. I finally was able to log into Tinder, which I couldn't before. Not that it makes any difference. I never get any matches at all.
Oh, Sam.
Maybe because I'm not looking at my age group, you know. That's a problem.
Maybe. I'll help you with this Tinder thing.
Okay, we'll see what we can do. Help me figure it out a little bit. Yeah.
And you know, you have to have that selfie photo. Did you do it?
No, I didn't. I have... I actually have like a headshot. Maybe that's not a good thing, right?
No.
They say you shouldn't look like professional. You got to look like
like
you do every day type of a thing.
Right. And then also if there's women out there that are like, I don't want to date somebody in the entertainment industry and your picture is a headshot, they're going to just swipe
Yeah, they're going to associate that with it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You can have you see, but you can't have it as your main
one. As the main one.
Bury it.
Okay. So I'll take a selfie or something. Yeah. Although my selfies turn out like shit, but you know.
It's the angle.
It is the angle, huh? Okay, I'll try that. We'll see. The point is that, you know why it looks weird? Because we never see ourselves from those angles. You know, when we look in the mirror or whatever, you know, I don't see myself from up here. So I don't know how. So it looks weird when I take a picture like that.
It's okay. You know? You'll get used to it. That's a good angle.
Yeah.
It's a real good one.
Okay.
If you say works so. For everybody.
So just real quickly before we get to our guests, there's a couple of important things. First of all, Joe Cocker died at 70. And that was before your time too, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But,
I know who he is.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, everybody does. I mean, he's a very unique type of a singer. He's got a unique voice, unique presence and everything. And he was very popular. I mean, during Woodstock, he was like the highlight of the concert.
Yeah.
You don't know of Woodstock at all, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, you do know of it.
I've seen
you see, that's the thing I like about you. You know about things that happened before you were born. Some people don't. It's like there's no history, you know?
When I went to school, that was history.
Yeah.
That's what I learned about.
I know, Woodstock, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's that. And he lost a battle with lung cancer. And probably from smoking. I know he used to smoke when he was on stage too. So so that's pretty sad. But, you know. And then just finally, I wanted to bring up the fact that North Korea lost the internet for about 9 hours yesterday.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that?
I did.
Yeah. And so nobody's sure who did this. I'm sure it was us. But nobody is going to prove it for now. I mean, for a while, probably. So everybody's like bracing for a response now from North Korea.
And two cities are actually going to show the interview now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The movie.
So Sony is releasing it, and they are willing to show it in their theaters in Good. Atlanta and Austin.
Good. Well, that's about time. Maybe other people will do the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because they made the decision not to show it, and then all of these people were firing back saying, well, now we're giving in.
Right.
Okay, well, where were you when we started this conversation?
Right, exactly. But maybe they wanted to see what was going to happen first.
Maybe. I still can't believe this is a real thing.
I know, huh?
You know how I feel about this. It's so absurd. It's a movie. It's a movie with about a dumb storyline.
Right.
With actors that act in movies that are dumb.
Right. Except,
how
I mean,
we
they were
seriously?
Deeply offended, right. The North Koreans.
Right. Well,
it just goes to show you, he's a little kid, you know? I mean, he looks like a kid.
It's funny talking about history and what we learn in history. This is going to actually be printed in history books.
Yeah.
And it is a part of, you know,
it is.
What's going on and a sign of the times.
Yeah.
What's happening with cyber warfare.
Yeah, it is war, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh,
anyway, we can't fix the world, so we'll move on to something more pleasant. And... yeah. So we'll bring in our guest. Stephen, you can get close to the mic. We have Mr. Stephen Lyon in the studio. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor. Thank you.
And you're a photographer, professional photographer.
Yes, I've been a photographer about 28 years.
Wow.
Mostly based in Paris. Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
30, I would never got that.
Really?
And I'm 53.
Right. I know. She looks young, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's my mom.
Yeah, those are the genes, right? That's how you think is your
exactly.
mom.
Right.
Yeah, awesome. Well, your mom's beautiful too.
Thanks.
So it stays in the family.
Thanks.
I'm sure. And as you, so you have a sister, right?
Nope. Only
no?
child.
Oh yeah, the only child. I'm sorry, I confused you. But so an only child, and you succeeded, Jan.
I do.
You succeeded big time. Yeah, it's okay. You can talk.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can talk. Your mom doesn't really want to talk, so we set her aside. And so back to you, Stephen.
Yes.
So what kind of photography do you do?
Well, I've been shooting fashion, and now mostly recently, the last few years, mostly fine art. And I travel extensively in that. And I still shoot film. I'm a traditional shooter. I put a cape over my head and pull a trigger.
Oh, really? So no digital for you?
No, for advertising clients in today's times, you have to. But for all of my personal work and magazine work and anything that matters to me,
right?
It's always on film. Always,
right.
Always will be.
So now it's very important because you get a certain look, right, that you're accustomed to before digital cameras came out.
I mean, I like to think that my work is very cinematic.
Right.
And film certainly lends it to that feeling. And even on my, the reason I'm here is my latest journey in my life is this film in Africa that I'm making, which is not a photograph, but it's a movie.
Right.
Shot digitally.
Really, huh?
But I was walking through the bush always with a film camera on my shoulder.
Mm-hmm. So you spent a lot of time in Africa?
I've been spending a lot of time in Africa for over a decade, just because
really?
I love it. I would convince my clients that they needed to shoot that lingerie campaign in Namibia.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So you're a fashion photographer too. I mean, you've taken pictures. I mean, I've got some samples here of beautiful women,
of course,
men, of course, as well, models and things like that. We've had several photographers here, and it seems like men do like taking pictures of beautiful women because the question is why not, right? I mean, it's beautiful.
Well,
it's a great feeling.
I mean, honestly, for me, I get the same rush from a photograph, whether it be man, woman, or beast.
Really?
It's just a love of photography. Not
right.
that I don't love beautiful women, because certainly I do.
Right.
But I separate what I personally like with what I do professionally.
Right.
And I photographed a lot of great-looking men, and it's exciting.
It's all part of it.
I love it. It's a great photograph. I mean,
wow.
It doesn't really matter to me. And I've been shooting wildlife now for over a decade, and that has its own special gratification and excitement.
How did you get started with shooting wildlife?
On safaris.
And you went there by choice?
Yes. I mean, like I mentioned, I wasn't joking. I had some great clients, and I convinced them that shooting in Sosafle in Namibia would be a great backdrop for their lingerie line. And so we make that happen. And then over the years, I would bring other clients to other parts of Africa. But then I started doing my own trips and going to amazing places in Tanzania and Kenya and Botswana on safaris.
Wow.
And of course, I'm packing some great camera gear. Uh-huh. And the guides would just, they, first of all, they would Google me and they'd say, oh, we got a real photographer on the yeah. on the thing. And, you know, I would throw my girlfriend in the back of the vehicle and I'd be in the front seat, you know, with the guide.
Yeah.
she was happy to be there. So
yeah, fun. I'm sure.
But I really developed a real passion for that. And it was through that, one of those recent experience, well, recent, a year and a half ago, experiences that I was told by one of my guides that they were organizing a 1,000-kilometer trek to walk through Africa on foot, which hasn't been done for 100 years.
Right. That's pretty far. I mean, that's a long
1,000 kilometers is a long way.
Right.
Yeah.
So walking that?
Walking.
Really?
Sleeping around in the bush with wildlife and...
Wow. How long does that take?
It took us... well, needless to say, I did it. I mean, I offered myself to come. He told me about it. And the reason they organized this was to bring awareness to the rhino poaching crisis, which is... it's huge and it's urgent
in the news.
And dire. But that's the thing. It's, you know, the elephants, which is just as severe, obviously, and it's horrific, and I support everything in that as well. But the rhinos are the first of the big five that will be extinct.
Really?
Oh, yeah, wow. By far. By years, they'll be extinct before the elephants. That doesn't make it more important. It just makes it more urgent.
Right. So it's 3 rhinos are killed a day?
About 3 rhinos are killed every day. It's very sophisticated. To backtrack a little bit, this walk was organized because it's so unusual that 1,000K is done on foot, that it got a lot of publicity in Africa. And so I immediately said I want to be a part of it. And I went back to New York and I lined up my ducks so that I could leave New York and the world that I had and traipse off throughout Africa for the next 4 months. And I brought a film crew with me. And I wasn't quite sure the kind of film I was going to make. But I knew I had to document this and make a film, and I knew that organically being there and in the bush, and what I decided to do was invite other people, Africans, that really had an affinity and really knew what was going on, not somebody from the outside that read some newspapers, to come around the campfire, to walk on the trail, to tell us what they took and what they believe and what they've seen change in Africa concerning wildlife. And it was a really great decision, one of the few good decisions that I made on this whole journey. And out of that organically came the stories that I'm unfolding and telling in my film, and the people that I'm following and highlighting what they're doing heroically to try and curb and help save the rhinos. And really, this film that I'm making is about education and hope, because most people in this country, in Europe, other than the fact that they kill rhinos and even half of them don't even know it's for the horn, they don't know anything beyond that.
Yeah.
You know, they really
just
don't
do it because they get the money and...
Well, they don't know, but people don't understand the scope, the reasoning, why the Asians have been doing this for 1,000 years.
Right.
Why is it since 2009, it's gone from 80 rhinos being poached a year to this year over 1,030?
Wow, are you serious?
And it's going up drastically every single year. And there's reasons behind that.
Right.
The number one notable reason is that for the first time in our history, you have a middle class in Asia.
Mm.
What did they want? They want what that 0.1% had, which was ivory, tiger bones, which has now been parlayed into lion bones because you can't get any more tiger. They killed them all.
Wow.
So now they put out propaganda in Asia that lion bones are even cooler. It's even better for your penis and for whatever you think you're taking it for.
Right. Mm.
So now the lions, which people in this country don't know at all, will be on the endangered and extinct list soon.
Right.
Very soon.
Right.
So, I really want to open the world's eyes as to what's really going on in Africa and what the possibilities are to curb and to change this. I mean, obviously, the perfect scenario is that the Asians stop wanting it.
Right. Yeah, so the demand goes down.
Culture.
You got to talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Jen,
I know.
Talk to the mic.
Well, right. I mean, you would think the Asians, because they have, you know, their spiritual nature, and it all comes from there, that they wouldn't want to kill other living beings just for material
But that, and that is true, but that's a percentage, and you're talking about billions of, you know, so many people. I can't answer for that. And actually, I'll be following the money trail from the shooting in Africa into Mozambique, Maputo, which is where the syndicates are. If I survive that, I'll be going into Thailand and Vietnam and into China. So really showing where this goes. It's unbelievable, but a lot of the money and the horn and the infrastructure actually follows the same as the sex slave industry, which is big.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. You wouldn't think rhino poaching. What does that have to do with this? But it's it is.
But you're saying it's syndicates. It's like
it's the syndicates,
right?
Yes.
It's
yes.
like gangs that that are totally organized.
Very very organized.
Right.
Very organized. But the thing is there, you know, the pawns in this are the starving young gentlemen in the regions outside of the Manuleti and outside of Kruger and whatnot that are just trying to feed their families, where these villages have an 85 to 87% unemployment, and most of those jobs are for women, and most of those jobs are in game reserves.
Right. And that's in Africa.
Of course.
Right. No, because we were talking about Asia as well.
That's well, no, but I'm talking about where they take the horns and where
they...
Right. How did you become fascinated with Africa?
Gosh, I mean, I don't know. I'm an adventureman at heart. I mean, you just put me there and I became fascinated.
Really?
No, but who wouldn't be? You know, we grew up seeing Jungle Man and Tarzan, and all of a sudden you're in Africa and you're seeing this elephant 20 meters away and you're seeing this rhino and these lions, and it wasn't hard for me to decide that I wanted to be coming here for the rest of my life.
Really? Wow.
Oh, absolutely.
How did the first trip come about for you?
First safari or first trips? I mean, I started traveling northern Africa a lot, which has nothing to do with southern Africa.
Right.
And then I had some really great trips through Namibia, which is extremely beautiful. And the indigenous tribes, the Himba people, which I photographed on the Angola border. And that was all wonderful, but that had nothing to do with wildlife. It wasn't until I took my first trips into Kenya and to Tanzania that I experienced wildlife and fell in love with that.
Wow.
And the grandeur and how majestic and beautiful they are. And on the same flip side, when you see this 5-ton beautiful beast that really doesn't want to hurt you, you know, rhinos eat grass, with his old face hacked off by an axe.
Wow.
Bleeding to death for 4 days before it actually dies.
Wow.
Stumbling, hobbling because his Achilles heels have been hacked by a machete so that the poachers could whack off that horn with an axe so it doesn't make any noise. Mm-hmm. This is wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
This has to stop.
Right. And there's no, like, laws
and it's
there,
human beings
like solid
that are doing
laws,
this.
Right? I mean, are there, like, solid laws in Africa against that stuff?
Of course they are, but are you kidding me?
Yeah. Nobody's enforcing
laws for what?
Anything,
I mean, it's a wonderful, exciting place, but they police their own. The villages that I'm talking about, which I spent lots of time in, and I was blessed by witch doctors to even be allowed to walk in there, and which is why I have an inside story, why I've been accepted, and why the people, and it wasn't just me, they never would have accepted me on my own, but the people that introduced me to these tribes, that trusted me because of our time spent in the bush walking 1,000 kilometers, they figured out who I was, they let me into their inner circles, and which really showed me the real story behind it and what's possible and what can really happen. And where I was going with this before is these young men that are recruited by these syndicate leaders. It's like in East LA, you know, some guy with a car and a lot of chicks pulls up in his Porsche and he's got three hookers in the back and this young guy's going, I want that.
Right.
How do I get that? Well, you sell this Coke. That's how you're going to get that.
Right.
Okay, great. Right now. Yeah. It's kind of like in Mozambique and these places where there is no law, basically. And Asia is the number one supporter of the country, by the way.
Mm.
Why there's no law? The poachers live in houses with a BMW and the girls right next to people in mud shacks. And they advertise it. This is what I do because nobody's going to bring them down.
Right.
So the kids in these areas are growing up like that's the Pied Piper.
Right.
That's what I want to do, Dad. So I can live like him and have those girls and have that car. And
right.
So, but this is actually in Mozambique, but in South Africa, where the local villages, where they actually recruit the poachers, the pawns. You know, a lot of Americans are like, we need more guns and we need to go kill all these poachers. There's millions of behind them to back right. them up. If right. you killed poachers, they're just, their friends step in and take their place. It doesn't do anything. What could help, what is a part of my film, is to educate these people. They're such a prideful people. And if they really understood that by taking out these animals, we're not just talking about rhinos, we're talking about elephants and everything is connected.
Right.
Right.
By taking out these animals, they're going to be taking away their friend's mom's job. Mm. The few jobs in the village will be gone. These people, you know, the police never go in there. If the village leaders, the elders, decided they didn't want poachers coming in to recruit their young, they would never make it across the city line.
Really?
Ever. It's not going to stop poaching. It's just going to make it a lot more difficult to get these pawns. This is one thing that needs to happen. We need to find ways to detract, to detour the amount of poaching enough to where we can find a way to educate, and I believe the young people in Asia, to where they say, you know what, Dad, that's pretty effed up.
Right.
This is not cool, that horn you have on the mantle that I only see use when all of your weird 20 friends come over here and you grind a little bit of it up to drop in their champagne glass. Mm.
That's even what they
though,
do with it?
Oh, yeah. Even though we know that it's like snorting your fingernail. You might as well chop up your toenail and grind it, and that's the high you're going to get from doing a rhino horn.
Wow.
It's made out of keratin, the exact same thing. Mm. And yet, because of, like I said, with the new urgent middle class in Asia, and they want what the rich people had and this, that, and the other thing, it literally has been reduced to a simple status symbol for insecure people at their parties. And they actually advertise it in certain countries in Asia as a hangover cure. Mm. You're killing these animals because they think it might help their hangover.
That is so... Mm.
It's just wrong.
Yeah.
It's just absurd. And the thing is, you know, it's been going on for a long time. But I think, and I'm hoping to make a film that will get accepted, because I'm not pointing fingers and I'm not going to say this is the way to fix it. That's the answer. I'm going to open all the doors.
Right.
Awareness.
And really bring awareness to people, because people in this country care. There's enough animal lovers in this country. History will tell us that they will write their congressman, go to the White House lawn, start picketing. I want my kids to see an elephant and a rhino in person, don't you?
Right, yeah. right.
You know, I don't want to see them in a photograph or a picture book or a zoo. I mean,
right?
No, they shouldn't be coming.
And yet, it's our generation. It's the last decade that's decimating these beasts, and it's our generation that can save them.
Yeah,
it will not happen in the next generation because they'll be gone.
Right.
Now, the question, though, I mean, can you really educate these people who are really like just hungry for?
Yeah, because a lot of the South Africans, the village people,
right?
We did a thing. We were walking through the villages, and we wanted to see. We had a lot of kids, and we had a little contest having children draw rhinos in the sand. Mm. Most of them didn't know what one looked like.
Wow.
Wow.
Some of them drew a rhino with no horn because that's kind of what their dad said they should look like.
Yeah.
And a lot of the kids, they just heard it was a bad thing, but it could make them money and help out their poverty. They had no idea that there was a possibility that they could be extinct. Mm. And a lot of them even thought, older people, that this was white man's propaganda that we were feeding them. They weren't extinct. There wasn't a problem. There's a surplus of rhinos and elephants down the pipe.
Right.
You know, they just don't really understand the horrific nature that they're killed and the possibility they could be gone.
Right.
And if they do understand that they could be extinct, then they will also understand that these jobs that their village has won't be around.
Right.
They won't have jobs.
Have you seen it done like where they're enlightened about these things and
yes,
educated?
I absolutely have.
And they actually stop?
I'm one of the incredible characters that I'm filming in my movie. Is the local minister. And you have to understand something. This is a $1 billion industry. What would the drug cartels do in Mexico if they thought there was somebody that was going to walk around East LA and curb their business?
Right. Yeah.
They're going to take them out.
Right. Yeah.
Easily. Nobody, and they're never going to get caught. Well, it's kind of not far from that in Africa, and they don't have the LAPD.
Yeah.
They have nobody.
Which is pretty badass. Yeah. They have nobody. So for somebody to speak out, they're really taking a chance. They have to really believe in what they're doing. And I have met some individuals like this, and they are getting up in their Sunday sermon. They are holding town rallies, and they are speaking that this is not a white man's thing. This is our issue. This is our Africa, and we need to save our animals. And if you want to have jobs, and if you want the white men to help you create jobs in this area, then we need to change how responsible we are towards the wildlife.
Right. Right. I mean, how many people travel to Africa to specifically go on safari and
of
see
course.
Rhinos and
elephants? I mean, right. It's such a huge industry for these countries.
That's the only reason I want to go to Africa.
Well, there's other reasons, but that's a great reason.
Well, that's the one I know about right now. I'm sure once I got there.
That's a really great reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's other things on the table, of course, with farming rhino horns. Well, I've seen that, too. Number one, if a farmed rhino has to live in captivity and be taken care of, he can't defend himself in the wild. A mother can't protect her child, her baby rhino from a lion without a horn.
Right.
So what is that? You're literally demasculating, taking the whole very nature of what this being is about by lopping off their horn. Right. And by the way, they've also, to curb this tendency... And there's plenty of people that would get really rich by the sale of rhino horn in Africa. There's some billionaires that have been stockpiling rhino horns and championing the idea for South Africa to drop the laws and let them sell rhino horn.
Right.
But this didn't help with elephant tusks.
Right.
And they've also in Asia now they put out propaganda that the most potent portion of the rhino horn, the one that really, you know, makes you. Let's not make sure.
Yeah,
makes your dick hard.
Makes you pull.
For a better words, is the base of the horn. So, even if it's been lopped off, they're still going to shoot that rhino because at a street price of more ounce per ounce than gold or cocaine, that's how much the powder is going for.
Really,
more ounce per ounce than gold or cocaine, they're going to kill that animal in a second for 2 inches of stub.
They don't even care. They don't
they
even
do
think
care.
Twice about it.
So this really isn't a solution. But there's a lot of – this film that I'm making is showing a lot of these solutions, possible solutions. Maybe it's going to be a combination. Like I said, I want to make a film, and I am making a film that is not going to point fingers or put anybody necessarily in jail. It's going to make a lot of people, I hope, informed, angry.
I'm already angry.
And also motivated to help because there is hope. We can win this battle.
Right.
But everybody has to band together and act now. And I'm certainly not the only film being made in Africa about this situation, but I'm hoping to be the film that actually gets seen.
Yeah.
Because nobody sees the other movies that have been made.
Wow.
So I have Apple Computer as an official sponsor, which is thank you, Apple. They're not donating any, unfortunately, they're not donating any money, but I have a plethora of great computers at my disposal. And then, God bless him, Jared, the owner of the Red Cam Corporation, and they supplied the cameras, of course, for Avatar and The Hobbit, and it's like, it's the camera of Hollywood.
Right.
Well, Red has stepped forward, and they're going to support my project back to Africa with all my camera gear. Otherwise, I would be looking for a lot more money on Indiegogo than I actually am.
Right.
How much are you looking for?
I need about $200,000, but that's conservative. But with that, I'm going to go to Africa, and I'm going to make this film.
Right.
I'm going to make this film. Of course, it will definitely see the circuits of the festivals.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, you want it to get seen by as many people as possible.
Right.
So I'm making an hour and a half docu-feature in certain markets. We would love to see it in the movie theaters because it's being filmed in that way.
Right.
It is not a film about dead rhinos. It's a film about education, information, and how we can help save these. There is a little bit of that in the film. I've been privy to it. I've filmed it. It turns your stomach. It pisses you off. You cry. But it's certainly not a movie filled with this.
Right.
At all. Right. Nobody wants to see
it. So it's more like a movie to make us aware and want us to take action.
It's a film of awareness and education.
You can't just sit back and watch
it. And I directed my team that I want to make this as if it's the newest Clint Eastwood movie. It looks beautiful. Mm. It's telling a real story, but it does not look like a porno in the woods with everything under definition and overly lit. And this looks like a beautiful cinematic experience. It's telling a real story.
Right.
So I'm hoping that will be another aspect that will have people really want to sit there and be a part of it. And
you're
watch
kind of
it.
Taking us on a safari for those that
I'm
have
taking you on a safari on. And a journey. And this is my journey. This is what I tell people. I'm on a journey. I put my life on hold a year and a half ago.
Very
I'm
cool.
not shooting photographs anymore. I'm making this film. This right. is what my life is about.
Wow. So it consumed you pretty much because it's such, you feel so strongly about it.
It is. It's got nothing, not even important. I'm heavily invested, not only financially, which means nothing, or time-wise, but there's a lot of important and amazing people that I respect in South Africa that are counting on me to finish this film.
Oh,
they
wow.
want me to tell this story.
Right.
And they opened up doors for me and risked their own lives to open my eyes to what's really happening in the hopes that I'm going to follow through, finish this film, and get it out there so that what we took a chance to be exposed to is going to get seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you say you're mad. Great. Have other people see the film. We want people to write their congressman, to do this, to do that, and the other thing. You can – it's interesting. There was a blogger that was going to blog about me, and then she didn't. And she goes, you know, because I'm supporting a baby elephant every month. And that's how I'm contributing.
Really?
And I'm like, my older brother supported a little kid in North Africa for 6 years. He never saw him. And it's not that it's a bad thing, but it's not going to do anything to curb starvation. And her supporting a little elephant that's mother was poached is a wonderful thing. And you should go to the elephant and the rhino sanctuaries in Africa. It breaks your heart.
Right.
And it's horrible that this has to be, but it is great that they have these places.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, but... people need to be aware of what's going on there to really make a difference.
Isn't that the point of blogging? Is so you reach more people than
I know.
One elephant?
I know.
Like, cool, you can help that one elephant.
Yeah, it was
but
very
how
funny.
About
yeah.
help the other
I, there has actually been quite a few really wonderful blogs that have done stories on me, and then it gets tweeted and sent around. And that's my dream. I'm hoping from this show that a lot of people will go to Indiegogo, see my campaign, feel inspired enough to leave whatever they feel comfortable with, and also to share it with other like-minded, caring individuals, because
right.
that's the way this works. Mm-hmm. You know, I would also love for some cushy film producer sitting on the hills behind us to say, you know what? He needs 200 grand. Well, in Hollywood, what is that?
That is nothing.
Let him go make a film that's going to make a difference.
Right.
When we see things like The Interview being made, it's so ridiculous. And it's even being pulled from theaters and
it's
losing money.
Yeah,
why not
so
make films that matter?
Yeah.
And who cares if this film loses money?
Right.
It's about saving an iconic species and educating a population that really doesn't know what's going on.
Right.
I can't tell you how many people have come up to me in New York saying, why are they killing the rhinos? And it's hard for me not to laugh and like walk away from them, but then I have to, you know what? This is why I'm making this movie.
Right. You have to educate.
This is
them.
What it's all about.
Right.
I mean, when you hear why, for status, that is so absurd, and that's what makes me angry. I'm like, I didn't know, you know, that the rhinos were going extinct until recently when reading the news
before
people
don't
show
know.
Here. But then to hear that they are, and for such a stupid reason, it's like, how can you not get mad?
Yeah. Last year, 687, that was the number that fell to poachers. And that's only the number of the carcasses they find.
Right.
They anticipate another 30% that they never find.
Do they do anything else with the rhino once they take the horn? They just...
It's never... The meat is never eaten. Nothing. They usually kill the baby because why not?
Yeah.
It's got a little stub on its nose as well. Mm-hmm. It's horrific.
Right.
And the cruelty, the barbaric nature that these beasts are brought down. And I've one another person in this film, a friend of mine now, Lorinda. She's developed a system where they're darting the rhinos. They're harmlessly injecting the horns with a poison, which
really?
It doesn't affect the rhino at all.
Right.
It dyes the base of the horn purple, so a poacher might see that and go, "Oh, this horn is poison." Right. It's one system. It has its flaws. I've been a part of this darting. It's an unbelievable experience because I literally had her teach me how to take the pulse of a rhino, and I sat there with tears streaming down my face.
Right.
Because there's a vein in their ear, and you sit there and hold this big vein, which is like a garden hose.
Wow.
And you can feel the blood pumping through this rhino horn, and his nose is like blowing up dust because they're so huge. Mm-hmm. And I was just imagining, even though it's in this situation right now because we're trying to help it, your mind wanders, well, this is also probably the noise he's making right before he dies.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Right.
Breaks your heart. Now, this is, I don't know if this is going to work. They haven't had any poachings for the rhinos that have been treated. It's called treatment. Maybe. But the thing is, you'd have to literally treat every single rhino in a known park so that poachers knew that, okay, that particular park, we're going to have problems. Because what can also happen is poachers, you know, they track the rhinos by footprints. Mm-hmm. Well, if they track a rhino, they're not going to want to track him again. Yeah. So they'll take him out, even if they can't use the horn.
What?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. And then people think don't realize as well, you know, things that I'm not going to talk a lot about things like this until the film is out, but there is a lot of corruption. There's a number of the poacher and the security forces that are turning the other cheek, a number of the game reserve lodge owners that are turning the other cheek, reporting the poaching 20 hours later when they heard the gunshots at noon. They don't send in the anti-poaching unit till 3 o'clock in the morning. All of this is going on.
Right. So there's a lot of corruption and stuff, which is something that's pretty common in Africa and stuff, because
it's the Wild West, which is one reason I love Africa. You go into Dar es Salaam in Tanzania and you walk around the bazaars and there's all these different cultures and languages. And I mean, I love it. Yeah. I mean, I will go there forever to be a part of that. It's like the Wild West, you know.
Yeah. You know, I'm surprised that you're saying it's happening in South Africa, too, because that's a pretty westernized country where it's a lot, well, not a lot, maybe, but a little more civilized, maybe, than people in the bush.
Yeah, I mean, of course it is. I mean, you go into Cape Town, you're in South Beach.
Right.
You know,
it's beautiful.
You go into Joburg, which is a little more dangerous, but it's pretty cool, you know, da-da-da-da-da. But the rest of South Africa is, you know.
Right, and that's also the
wild.
Same with South Beach.
You know,
right?
And also you have to understand something. The South Africa is really the only place left in the world with any numbers of rhinos.
Really?
They've been killed everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, there's a handful in Kenya with 20 guards each around the rhino.
Wow.
That's no life. They're gone from Tanzania. They're gone from, there's a few left in Namibia. It's, they've, of course, there used to be rhinos in Java, in China, in Vietnam, India. They all had their own rhinos. They were gone a long time ago.
Wow.
Russia had rhinos. Gone.
So when is your film coming out then, in terms of like, how soon these rhinos will be killed off?
Well, I was hoping to be back in Africa a long time ago. But, you know, things are with, you know, there's a reason. Things happen. This the situation has escalated. Other political things have come into play. My story is a bigger story now than if I would have had, because I financed the first half of the film. And my family actually helped me out, too. If we would have continued down that road, the film, I think it would have been tremendous. But now it's going to be a little bit of a different film because history has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Things have changed. It's actually gotten more dire.
Yeah.
So, yes, the sooner I get back and the sooner I come back and get this out there, the better. I'm not waiting for it to get more dire. You know, we're not postponing this on purpose.
Right.
But it is contingent on me raising the funds to go back and finish this film. I have a film crew on hold right now, a production facility on hold right now for me to say green light. I'm coming back February 1st. Let's finish this film. I'm hoping that's going to happen. You know, right. If it doesn't happen through the crowdfunding, it will happen. I am going to finish this movie.
Right. You're pretty determined. I mean, at this point, it's too late to go back.
There's no, why would I? Yeah. Why would I not?
Do you feel any personal safety issues with the poachers seeing you film there or knowing what you're doing?
We don't. You don't think about that too much. It's definitely there. I trust the people that have agreed to guide me through this. They're pretty badass.
I'm sure.
And apparently there was, I shouldn't say this to my mom in the studio, but there was some severe threats against us that they kept from me and my crew.
Wow. So, yeah, I mean, because
you told me about it after the fact.
Because you're like exposing a lot of stuff that people don't really want.
Yeah, and but I'm going to say at this point that really, and it's true, this film really is about educating people like you as to what the horrors that it's really happening. So you're like, holy shit, I didn't know that that's really the extent of it.
Right.
But also I want to expose you to the possibilities of fixing this, of saving it, of helping. And ultimately, I would love to get these films seen in Asia because I want to reach young people and tug on their heartstrings because we're not born wanting to, not having a sympathetic heart for that injured puppy, right. Which we all have.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's nothing I wouldn't swerve around to miss a dog on the freeway. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but they're not really like that over there, but they're not born that way.
Right.
Yeah. You know, they're conditioned that way, not to care so much about animal life and things like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had a very great experience of some months ago. I was in Thailand. About a year ago, I was in Thailand. Something like a year ago. You know, I was in Thailand. And, they eat dogs.
I was thinking that when
blah, 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 blah. They do. But what was incredible is, and I was actually on an island called Koh Samui, which is kind of a touristy thing going on, but even though when I was working, I was up on little islands, and it was really fantastic. But what I'm going with this was there was a movement with young people to help the injured dogs to get run over by carts, to take them in, and to watch television with them on their lap, to discover the joys that how much love it is and how cool it is to have this dog not in your stew, but sitting next to you watching television.
Right, right.
You know, I mean,
to make it a pet. Wow, make that's it a pet. Concept they have to learn there.
Yeah. Instead of an hors d'oeuvre. So the young people are taking this on. They're discovering that, and that is, right. to me, uplifting and motivating.
Right.
You know, and this is in Thailand, which
right.
what's, you know, I haven't been into Vietnam and China yet, but, and I've gotten lots of letters and mail and positive things from lots of Asian people thinking this is a horrific thing that's going on.
Right.
It's certainly not everybody.
Right.
And so I want to reach those people over there. And together, maybe we'll try and have some Asian celebrities' voiceovers in the film, you know, work it however we can, so that people there will understand.
Right.
You know, it was like this fantastic movie, The Cove, about the dolphins. Most of the people in Tokyo didn't know this was going on,
right.
Or at least they said they didn't. But this movie changed a lot with that situation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I'm really hoping that my film can change some situations, whether in Africa, on our front, in European front, and ultimately, let's pray to God, on the Asian front.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
that's where it really has to happen in the end, if this is ever going to be, if we don't need guards around our animals anymore.
Right,
right. Right. We're almost out of time. Stephen Lyon, go ahead and tell people how they can help.
Well, I'm currently doing a fundraising campaign on Indiegogo. So you can Google Indiegogo. My film is called Something That Matters. And I'm really hoping that it will matter.
Right.
Also, I mean, I should mention,
we saw like a preview of it, and mm-hmm. it was really touching.
Yes, there's a 6-minute clip on there. I should mention that when I decided to take on this undertaking, I decided to open up a nonprofit 501(c) company to be the production company over the film. Mm-hmm. So this entire thing is pro bono nonprofit, which means that any donations that I do that people want to donate to the film, they will be okay. It's the time of year. It's a tax write-off, people.
Right.
And also for the rewards on there, I was traveling this whole 1,000 kilometers with film cameras on my shoulders, and I was shooting some pretty incredible wildlife imagery, and I'm offering these as rewards. Printed by my little Geppetto printer in New York, not on a digital printer. A guy in the dark room with paper and salt and chemicals.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So I'm offering really something of value for the high end supporters. But it's the low end supporters. It's the people that want to give up that $10 or $20 that are really going to make this work.
Right.
You know what I mean? And nothing is too small, and everything is appreciated. And at the very least, just share with people.
Right. And do you have a website or anything people can check out?
Facebook Generation. There's a Facebook page for Lionheart Love.
Okay.
There's also, of course, I have my own. There's a blog for the film, Something That Matters. And then I have my own personal website, which is StephenLyon.com.
Right. And everybody can Google you. You're all over the place. So.
All over the place.
Right. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Fascinating. We wish you all the best.
Thank you.
In getting this done. I think it's very important.
Tweet, people. We still have time. Tweet.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not a tweeter, but I'm becoming. I've learned the value of a good tweet lately.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Stephen Lyon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much
again.
For having
All
me.
The best. Jen, thank you, and we'll see everybody tomorrow.
Terrific.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.